You are listening to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode 220, brought to you by C2E2, Audible. Go to audible.com/iFanboy for a 2-week free trial and in-stock trade. To the iFanboy.com Pick of the Week podcast. It's episode 220. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and I am here in the same room with Josh Flanagan.
I have nothing left to say on that subject.
And Ron Richards.
Hello, yes, we all are here gathered.
We're gathered.
In Brooklyn.
You sound husky, Ron.
I'm a little husky. A little throaty.
I'm not gonna lie.
A little throaty.
It's a little sexy.
Yeah, well, you know, we are in the bed together.
Mm-hmm. It's true.
We three are iFanboy.com. We like comics. We read comics. Every week we read a bunch of comics, and one of us writes the pick of the week. That's the best one they read. They write about it on the website. We talk about it in this podcast, along with various other comics from the week and topics of interest. Although this week, a little bit different, we are scuttling a lot of the topics of interest. We're going to talk about every single book.
It's an iFanboy first. We are, because we're gathered here together and we're having a fun time, we have all of our books in front of us. We're going to talk about every book we bought this week.
Every book we bought. So yeah. No emails or voicemails this week. No other topics of interest, just books. And also stay tuned for the end. We got giveaways to announce. February's giveaway month at iFanboy. If you recall, if you listened last week or if you've been to iFanboy.com, you know that there's some big giveaways. There's a big choker giveaway. Choker's coming out this month.
Yeah, choker's shipping early this week.
And there's going to be a giveaway at the end of the month. There's a Planet Hulk giveaway this week.
That's so what we're announcing. Yep.
There's going to be four winners, so maybe you're one of them. Just listen to the end. And before we get to the show, we'd like to remind you and give you a quick warning. This is a review show. We're going to be talking about the books we read, all of the books we read, and there will be some spoilers. There will be some plot points discussed, so if you're worried about that, you haven't read your books yet, pause the show, come back. You'll be happier. You'll have a less stressful life.
Yes,
you'll be zen.
You won't get heartburn.
Now, Ron.
Yes.
You had the pick of the week.
I did. So yeah, I pick of the week, and it was a really great week for books. I thought it was just like I gave out more fives than I normally do.
It wasn't a huge week. I had about 10 less books than last week.
Yeah,
but
I bought less. Yeah.
But there was a good core of fives in there, which was
nice. What was great was that I had bought a book for a friend for a birthday present, and it turns out he had it already, so I returned it when I bought my books. So with the credit, I spent like $10.
Nice. Good.
And I was like, I got to do that every week.
So you didn't get him something to replace it.
You're like, I did. No, I had it backup.
I feel like we should clarify for new listeners, a five we're referring to as a 5-star book on the iFanboy.com rating scale.
Yes, exactly. I gave rated a lot of books 5 out of 5. And really, it came down to inches towards the end. There was a good handful of books that I could have went with pick of the week. And as I'm whittling down, I was left looking at two. And ultimately, what I ended up going with was Siege Number 2, by Brian Michael Bendis and art by Olivier Coipel. And if you are on Twitter,
Olivier.
And so if you're on Twitter and if you follow a lot of people who read comics and you follow a lot of creators and stuff like that, you probably saw a lot of buzz about Siege Number 2 starting early in the week. In fact, I got into an argument with Rob Liefeld over it, over Coipel, but not about Siege 2, but about art in general, things like that. But Rob's great, so I'm not saying bad anything about Rob. He's a good guy.
But, sweetheart. Anyway,
yeah, sweetheart.
Sweetheart. I remember my kids hang out with him. It's cool.
So,
you stand-up guy.
You guys didn't get the face I made. Yes.
Anyway, so there was a lot of buzz, and normally, and I wrote about it in my review a little. When we're doing the pick of the week, I don't want to get swayed by popular opinion, and we've had a lot of that. You know, like Blackest Night was huge, and for some reason, Josh went with Scalped. You know, and things like that. But
I try to go in completely cold and clean when I go in.
Exactly, but you can't ignore it. That's the problem.
Am I ever going to live that much?
No.
I know, that's why I brought it up. It was a joke.
It's funny you mentioned the hype because I read Siege early before you did because I'm on the East Coast, you're on the West Coast, and I started an email to you saying, oh my God, Siege 2.
Yeah.
And I decided not to because I didn't want to be part of the hype machine. I didn't want you to go in with any preconceived notion. So, but I almost wrote you about it.
Whenever Connor says he likes something, Ron automatically.
Exactly. Like, I just jump right to it. And the thing is that it's very easy to like, as you're writing it, if you're going to go with a book that not a lot of people read, like when I picked Forget Lists or whatever, knowing that so many people like another book, it's like, oh, you know. But it's funny because it works in the other direction. it works in both directions because you're influenced in writing about what people want you to write about, but then also it's like...
And, but ultimately, you want to pick the best thing that you read, no matter what the reaction.
So let's talk about the book.
Ultimately, what I did was when I sat down and read it, Siege number 2, I've been skeptical about the whole Siege event going into it. I was like, ah, event. Dark Reign has kind of been
dragging. Burn me 3 times. Fool me.
Right, exactly, exactly. And... Siege number 1, we had talked about it. It was good, but it felt rushed to me, and it felt like it felt somewhat contrived. The whole replicating of the Civil War jump starting moment, things like that. Siege number 2 was awesome. Siege number 2 was everything that I would want from an action packed superhero comic book.
Yes,
like, hands down.
I think in this case the speed is working in its favor. I agree. It's moving quickly. I don't want to dawdle. I don't want to waste time. I don't want 8 issues. I want 4.
I don't want to go to the Savage Land.
Yeah, exactly. And it's funny because you know we've criticized Brian Michael Bendis before in the past with his ability to write teams and ability to write lots of characters. And House of M, you know, a lot of people say House of M reads better as a trade paperback and in one kind of thing. But that was a little rough to read. Secret Invasion had its issues. He's nailing this.
Yes.
Nailing it.
I think I liked 1 more than most. I liked 1 a lot. 2 was fantastic. 2, we all picked this book.
Everybody here would have picked this, which is fascinating.
I didn't know that you guys all picked it as your pick of the week. That's awesome. And this book had a bunch, he wrote a bunch of great moments. There's, you know, Thor getting rescued by Maria Hill with the bazooka. And there's
that's the only moment if you think about too hard because like she basically comes in with a pickup truck and takes up the guys who beat Thor.
That's old fine. Pickup truck that floats in the air. By the way,
that's fine.
I'm not complaining about that.
Yeah, it wasn't floating in the air.
No, it was just bouncing.
It was bouncing like a cartoon.
Before we get to that, the main thing because I have a point about all the little issues, little things. Everyone's talking about the big thing that happened.
Right.
And to me, that wasn't the draw of this book.
No.
To me, the draw was the little issues you're talking about. That, to me, what made this issue what it is.
In the beginning, you had Ares getting, you know, kind of a wake-up call by Heimdall and Baldur that, you know, he's being manipulated. Then you got, you know, the save from Thor. And I'm going through the book, just through the pages. Then you've got Cap's motivational speech. Now, I've heard some people criticize that it wasn't that motivational, but I got a rise out of it. I thought it was good. You know, whenever you talk about taking over your country. You've got, you know, the gathering of the heroes and them taking off. Then Sentry versus Ares, which...
Whoa, you just scooted past 2 big moments.
Which are?
Bucky abdicating the shield.
That didn't happen yet. You said
heroes take off.
Hang on, getting ready to take off. Okay. Hang on. Right. Then you know, so you got the Sentry and Ares going at it. Then you've got the heroes taking off and Bucky giving Cap the shield
and Jarvis giving Cap the Iron
suitcase,
Man armor.
Yeah, which is awesome.
Yeah.
And then you've got Thor kind of stepping up and saying, you know, towards the end of the book and saying, you know, this is how I'm not going to go down. And then it ends on, which is awesome.
The best single page I read.
The best single page with just Iron Patriot Norman Osborn looking up and just slowly the Cap shield coming closer at him, which was just
in the reflection of his mask.
Yeah. Bendis really hit a lot of beats on this. He hit a lot of great moments, but the thing that put it over the top was this Olivier Coipel's art was just unbelievable.
And, you know, I've talked about the Thor series before, and that was really the best part of that. And there was one thing is that I missed by not reading it was like that art really was something spectacular. He does Thor. I love the new Thor costume. I think it's one of the best redesigns I've seen in a long time.
I agree. And admittedly, I got a lot of shit in the comments, rightfully so, because I said how this is really the first Olivier Coipel thing I read when he did do House of M.
Yeah.
But there's a difference in that I couldn't recollect a single page from House of M. Mm-hmm. Maybe the only thing I could do was the puzzle piece thing. But this book, I like in a year from now, I'm going to be like, oh, that double page spread of all those heroes.
Yeah.
And that double page spread when Sentry ripped Ares in two. The shield coming at Iron Patriot. These are artistic moments that are now seared into my brain that I'm going to remember.
I literally squeal at the last page. I mean, every time I've mentioned Cap and Norm in the same sentence on the website in the last month, I've said, I hope he punches him in the stupid face.
Yep, and he's
going to shield him in the stupid face, which I will also accept.
Yep.
and the thing was, like, the neat thing about this book was that Steve Rogers is like, this ain't right.
Yeah.
I come back here, what the fuck?
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
You're going to give me shit about MySpace, and this is what happened? But, you know, the thing about the art that got me is right away, there's a page or two into it, when Heimdall stands up.
Yep.
The image of Heimdall and the way that they drew him, like right away, that was when I was like, oh, this is something great.
Yeah. No, Heimdall using his sword to push himself up.
Yeah.
Like, oh, the little touches like that.
Yeah.
Little touches like that, and just like... The double, like I said, the double page spreads, the Avengers grouping of all the team together is one that's like they, and he signed it, like, you know, when they when you see the artist's signature, yeah, on it, that's gonna sell for like $5,000. It's gonna be it's gonna be great. Sentry finally getting off his ass and doing something other than crying.
See,
whether
now,
you like what he did or not,
he has value as a villain.
Yes. Yep.
He has no value to me as a hero, but as a out of control, unstoppable villain, then he's interesting. Then he's interesting.
Yeah. Now I'm not as the two page spread of Sentry ripping Ares in half was like Invincible level blood and gore, which I was just like, wow. I'm not too worried because Ares is a god.
Weird in a Marvel comic book. I'll be honest. Yeah.
It was brutal. Yeah.
I don't know. It didn't fit. I didn't expect it or something like that.
I think I'm so at this point. There's so much brutality that I don't notice. But like, in the comments, it's interesting. Everybody referencing that moment. To me, that wasn't the moment I even registered as a big moment.
That was the big shocker moment.
But I said I didn't even think it was a shocking moment because
there was a lot of like,
because it was telegraphed from the very beginning. He's gonna be killed.
There was a lot of like people like going, see, I told you the Sentry was awesome.
It doesn't make him awesome.
Yeah, it doesn't. But I just like that he didn't fly away crying. we get a ton of foreshadowing. You know, when Nick Fury makes Ares' son stay behind.
Yeah, he's obviously gonna come back.
Yeah, you know, he's gonna be a factor coming down the road. But it doesn't matter because this is great. It's contained. This is going to be done in two more issues. I love it.
I think what's really strong about it is Bendis has peppered in a lot of really strong character moments in the midst of the action, which has been fun.
And what's great is that I get this, you know, this whole Siege thing, and I said how it felt rushed, and the thing I asked him, it is rushed. Like, Osborn got manipulated by Loki and said, let's go do this, and you feel the tension as his plan is falling apart in front of him.
Yeah.
I'm so looking forward to Norman Osborn being gone.
Yeah, exactly. Well, we don't know that it will happen.
I really want that to happen.
There's no guarantee.
I want that.
This is a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And I was so happy.
This is fun superhero comic. I kind of wish this was an issue of the Avengers, but okay, that's fine.
I said
that about Captain America Reborn.
But this I get. This makes sense to me. That's fine.
Okay.
I
can't wait till Cap gives Tony the suitcase.
Yeah, it's going to be weird because he's been a douchebag for five years.
There's a whole thing going on in Invincible Iron Man that we'll talk about.
We'll talk about it in a minute. Let's talk about Wolverine Weapon X, number 10.
Wolverine Weapon X number 10 was the Don't Miss podcast. I talked to Jason Aaron about this. This was within inches of being the pick of the week because this book was possibly the best single Wolverine issue I've read ever, I think.
Ever?
Really?
Ever, yeah.
Really?
Yes. Yep. This
it was very good.
Yeah,
I give it a 5.
This was a 5. Well, first off, before I get into the story, the art by C.P. Smith was just dazzling. It was beautiful.
It was very unconventional. I liked it a lot.
I said in my interview, it was kind of like Vertigo art. I mean, like it was, you know, very shadowy and very and textured and just
you know, it's funny. A lot of people mentioned this on the website, and I thought the same thing when I saw it. If Wolverine is supposed to be 5'5".
Yeah.
How tall is Jubilee, who's half his size in this?
That's a good point.
Is she 3'3" tall?
Yeah, I know.
She's a sprite.
This issue focuses around the fact that we've been introduced to a new character, this reporter at the Chronicle that Wolverine has shacked up with, and basically the cementing of their relationship and deciding to be boyfriend-girlfriend, which in a Wolverine comic is... Now, the funny thing is that Wolverine... Mauricio in the 80s, like Wolverine's romance was a plot point that kind of got left aside in the 90s and the 2000s as it was like Wolverine, claws, killing, all that kind of stuff. He kind of forgot that he had all these female relationships. And
he's a little man whore.
Yeah, no, he's a little man whore. We find the story of Wolverine's first sexual experience, his first losing his virginity story.
That was interesting.
It was such a great character moment to see him talking to Rogue, to Storm, to Jubilee, to Black Widow. You know, to all these women, the scene with the baby, I mean, you know the direction it's going is that he wants to have a family. Which is kind of funny because he's got two kids running around the Marvel Universe.
They're psychotic.
He doesn't care about that are psychotic. But
he knows that Deccan is a douche.
And the other one, Weapon X, is X-23 is a clone or whatever.
Not a real kid.
What I really liked about this...
You have to pay child support on a clone.
Or do you? Do you have to pay lab fees?
I don't know.
What I liked about this a lot was that in the trade era, which I obviously really love, when every story is 6 issues long, I like the fact that this was just a 1-issue story. And it's going to have ramifications and it's going to continue, but it was a complete... from beginning to end story in the 1 issue.
Yep.
And I liked that you can I wish they could do longer arcs and then shorter arcs and short pieces, and you can still put those all in trades.
Hickman's doing that with Fantastic Four.
He is, it's not a norm. It's unusual when you see it. I hope it is.
Yeah. Well, either way, it was a lot of fun and it was beautiful.
I liked it. I really enjoyed it, but I did think it was kind of weird. In that, like, I was like, really? Does Wolverine talk about his feelings like this that often?
Yes.
Really? He's very sensitive. He's got that hard ass. Yeah, and then exterior, but he's a very sensitive soul.
It's not really about my taste or anything, but I thought, is this gonna like disappoint a lot of Wolverine fans? Like, this is what you signed up for when you buy a Wolverine book.
Well, there's a page where he's fighting ninjas. Okay. Yeah. Well, no, but it's not. But if you ask me, the mystique of Wolverine is all of this. Is all the is the his interactions with Jubilee and Kitty. I kind of wish Kitty's not back yet.
Yeah. No, she's still in a bullet. Yeah. And then one of the other trying to figure out where to pee.
I don't know much about his relationship with those characters.
Yeah,
and so I, as a Wolverine fan,
I imagine that would have. So I rated it 4 stars. It's very good. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, you blew it. This is a 5-star book.
Okay,
hands down, you're wrong.
Another 5-star book was Scalped. Jason 34.
Aaron. Jason Aaron having a great week. Oh, wait, on the Wolverine part, we're going to get through. You know, there might be some written stuff on iFanboy coming up about this, but if you look at the sales numbers of the Wolverine books, Wolverine Weapon X is the lowest selling book, competing with Dark Wolverine and Wolverine Origins, which is utter bullshit because this is the best Wolverine book on the stand.
Yes.
So if you like Wolverine and you're buying Wolverine Origins or you're buying Dark Wolverine,
this is the main Wolverine book.
Stop. Buy Weapon X, seriously. Because,
this is the main Wolverine book. Exactly. It is the main Wolverine book.
Because Jason Aaron is doing, I want him to be able to finish what he's going to do. You know,
by flipping the title out on him like this, they
screwed him. Yep. Yeah, the Dark Wolverine thing screwed this title. But so buy Wolverine Weapon X.
Norman Osborn must be stopped.
Yes.
Now, Scalp 34?
34.
Okay, 4 issues after my infamous.
This was the end of the gnawing.
Which was, right, this is the first one was the one that I was the Blackest Night pick.
Right.
Wow, is what I have to say about this. This was a 5-star book in every sense of the word. This was the conclusion of that gnawing story, and a whole lot of stuff went down. Because at the beginning of this arc, if he wanted to, he could have ended the book here.
Yep.
But he didn't. At the end, he pulled a bunch of things out and turned things around, and now we're going to keep moving forward, which was the plan, but I was just... It had that feeling like he could have. You could have done it there.
What's interesting about this is in the first issue, they set up there's going to be a war between the Indians and the Hmong. Mm-hmm. And there was a war, but not in the way you expected there to be a war.
Yeah.
All the Hmong come to the reservation fully loaded, and they don't have a shootout. They end up leaving, and the war happens very subtly somewhere else. So I like the fact that you still got the release, but it was in a way you didn't expect to get it.
Yeah.
I liked that a lot.
I thought, really, one of the big pages in this were the, where Bad Horse takes Diesel out into the desert.
Shoots him
a lot.
2 clips worth, which is like 30 plus bullets.
Just keep shooting him. and I don't think they've used this so far.
Inner monologue?
His inner monologue the whole time, Dash is saying to himself about just shooting him over and over and over again, and like
in the description
of what's happening, and Diesel just
like, I shot him in the elbow again, and he starts screaming all manner of horrible things about my mother.
But by the end, he's just screaming like an animal.
Yeah,
really horrible.
A lot of people get shot in this. That's and true. I actually really like the page where the Hmong go back to where are they from? Wherever they're from.
Samoa.
No, to whatever city they're from.
Long drive.
And they open the door to their apartment, and there's Chief Red Crow standing there with a silenced pistol. And you go, oh, fuck. And then suddenly just go pop, 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 and they're all dead.
And that's all for them. and then at the end, big cliffhanger again, like, which makes perfect sense.
Yep.
They really set it up earlier. I'm not going to say what it is. But it's like, ugh, that's just...
This is a masterpiece. It's a
sticky situation going on there.
Everyone, just like Wolverine Up and X, everyone needs to be reading Scalped.
Yep.
Word.
Jason Aaron also wrote the out quote on the cover of Sweet Tooth number.
I was wondering
number 6, where he said, "I would crawl over broken glass to read this," which is a great description. Sweet Tooth is fun. Sweet Tooth, you know, we've been talking a lot about Jeff Lemire's work, and you know, continue to get better. You know, as he gets a feel for the monthly issue, but I had to laugh because Josh texted me while I was in the comic book store. He said, "Look at Sweet Tooth page 2." And turn
back to
it.
The well.
Back to the well. It's a hockey game. but we get a little bit of insight into Jeopard, his past, his kind of his origin, so to speak, and understand what, you know, what he received in payment for delivering Sweet Tooth to the where, what is that place called, the preserve or whatever. Yeah. It is, and we got to see some other freaky animal kids, and I'm totally pulled into this world and I want to see what happens.
I was a little disappointed by this because it went back to the well.
Yeah,
because I know
by the hockey thing.
Yeah.
Oh, it's one.
I know, yeah, but like, yeah, that's his, like, it's, yeah, his thing. I was really hoping to see him totally separate away from that and do, yeah, something different. And,
yeah,
I mean, if that's gonna be his oeuvre, that's fine. But yeah, I was,
well, just to clarify, turns out Jeopardy was a hockey player before all this whatever happened.
Did he have a brother whose wife he slept with?
No, but no. He was a hockey player and he had a wife, and then this plague hit and apparently the wife didn't make it, and. Yeah. You know, and a lot more. So the hockey was only two pages in the beginning. It's not like
it was, yeah, a hockey, but it was story. It was who he was, and I, yeah, just I was kind of, I think I was hoping for a touch more originality from what he'd done before.
Yeah,
and the rest of the issue was good, but that colored it. I was like, you know, I immediately made the joke, and I'm like, I don't want to joke about something. No,
yeah,
I don't want, yeah, the fact that it made me make the joke means, yeah, that it took me out of it immediately.
Yeah, and well, so you're always getting taken. That's a big thing you complain about, getting taken out of. I mean, I was okay with it. I mean, it's like, mm-hmm, it's, you know, I mean, it was still a great story, and you now. In the last issue where you hated Jeopardy, it's hard, you feel for him, you know, like it was,
he still,
you know,
did something awful, but you get the, true, sense he's gonna go back. I mean, yeah, the thing was, at the end of the last issue, which was my pick of the week, you know, he left him there and you kind of thought maybe that's it.
Yeah.
And this, now we know that's not gonna be the case. He is gonna go back, which is a little more standard.
Yeah.
And so I don't want to call it disappointing, but I was kind of hoping for something more, yeah, surprising.
Well, we'll see. I mean, that's the thing, I with every issue comes out, I don't know what to expect, and I, sure, like that. So, yeah.
If I hadn't had Siege as my pick league, it would have been Red Robin number 9, just barely edging out Wolverine. This is a great jumping on point, first of all. If anybody has dropped off of Red Robin and wants to get back, or are curious, has been hearing a lot about Red Robin, he's back in Gotham.
Say, I've been hearing about this Red Robin. What do you say, Bill?
Previously to this, Tim Drake has been in Europe and the Middle East searching for Batman. This is the only place that's been dealing with the fact that Bruce is lost in time. And now that he's gathered evidence, he's returned to Gotham. And there's a lot of great stuff where he's back in his hometown and he starts to feel better because he's been angry. And there's a very funny sequence where he beats up Killer Moth. The cops show up and they report that Dr. Midnight has taken down Killer Moth. Because everyone's been saying how the costume looks like Dr. Midnight. Mm-hmm. So they're basically saying, we realize that, we're moving on. And he runs into Superboy again. They have another great scene between them hanging out in Gotham. And it's just, it's sort of a return home. Mm-hmm. And it's a lot, you know, him swinging around and missing the town and deciding maybe he should ditch the costume because maybe he's beyond that. It's just really reestablishing Tim in Gotham. And then, of course, Ra's al Ghul shows up again and says, well, I'm not done with you, because he's been chasing him across the Middle East and says, you basically, in the last arc, Tim took out the League of Assassins. He just destroyed them. And now he says, Ra's al Ghul says he's going to destroy everything Tim loves in Gotham. So that's setting up the next conflict is going to be him and Ra's al Ghul. And at the very end, he goes back to the cave to get help from Dick or Damian, and ends up having to get help from Stephanie. She's the only one there.
Is Damian, like, what's Damian standing with Ra's al Ghul? Do they?
He hasn't really, there hasn't been a lot of, they haven't really come into conflict with each other yet, mm-hmm, that I've seen. There hasn't been a lot of interaction between the two,
yeah,
of them.
Yeah, that's because, so I don't really, I mean, it's interesting that he would be there at the same time that Damien's there and, yeah, they wouldn't interact. It feels like they should.
Well, Damien's off getting spinal surgery.
Yeah, that's true.
Or whatever it is. He's
healing
quickly, dead.
And then he's going to be a dick.
Ron, I dropped Buffy.
You blew it, my friend.
Yeah, I heard
you
that.
Blew,
yeah,
it.
Yeah, but you know what? I decided, I heard all the good words about it, but then...
Blew it.
It's kind of like with the series where I just got to a point where I don't really care anymore. Blew I don't it. Really care anymore.
This was the best issue of Buffy, clearly, in at least in a year.
That's not hard to do.
No, but it's been longer. So it's the first issue of the Twilight series, issue number 32, the Twilight story, written by Brad Meltzer. The issue starts off with Xander helping Buffy test her new powers. Basically, mm-hmm, she's gotten superpowers. So it starts with her outrunning a bullet. And Xander run, and I thought you read it. I'm so upset because I was looking forward to talking to you.
No,
I
didn't read it.
I'm so upset.
I dropped it.
Xander, you know,
you said it so pretty, like, nah, I dropped it. Yeah. I don't care, dude.
Xander going through saying, "Do you have X-ray vision? Do you know? Can you do this? Can you do that?" And there's a great sequence where he's trying to explain to her, "Yes, or can you phase?" She's like, "What's that?" He's like, "Well, you kind of turn into a ghost, and you can slip through things. And when you do that, it makes electronics not work, and you'll be a spunky brunette." And like, he's basically saying, "Are you kidding?" And like, yeah, and Buffy just not being fresh. She's like, "I don't see the point of that," but which is kind of funny. And then there was another great moment. This was laden with a lot of comic stuff. As a comic reader, I enjoyed it because there's one point where where Faith, Giles, and Andrew wake up. They were teleported in Twilight's The Villain's Lair, and in it there's a big machine, and it's the Psycon machine from the X-Men Teen Titans crossover.
Oh, really?
And so Andrew's freaking out. He's like, oh my god, he did it. You know, the dual compartments, the Simonson design. So there's a lot of comics meta kind of stuff in here. So it's a comic, but it was just written really, really well. And it was just like the story flowed. It moved it forward. We find out that Buffy's getting these powers because Slayers are dying all around the world. And she's absorbing their powers and getting amped up. And so that's, of course, a bad thing.
What story have I
read? Why didn't that happen before when she didn't have, when there were no other Slayers? Why didn't she have the powers?
I don't know. I'm only on season 4 of the TV show, so I'm...
That's when I stopped watching.
But,
I noticed the cover in the store on the shelf, like, from a distance, and I was like...
Which one? The variant or the normal?
The one you've got there.
I got the variant, yeah. That's the Action Comics.
Yeah, I was like, that's a neat cover. And I remember thinking that specific, and I don't ever look for that, so that was interesting.
Yeah, well, this is the variant one. They do the other painted one with the, but it was great. It was back to form. It was awesome, so...
Demo Volume 2 Number 1, so The Return of Demo, which is Brian Wood and Becky Cloonan's anthology series.
Yes, not anthology. I mean, it's just anthology. It's one shots. It's not an anthology.
But it's anthology, a series of
unreleased stories. I think of an anthology as multiple creators and that sort of thing.
That's anthology by definition, is a separate stories.
So. Yeah. Anyway, but it's one and done issues. I talked to Brian Wood on Talksplode. If you didn't hear that, you can go back to the feed and download that. Hear him talk about coming back to this title. I loved this title when it was out. I thought it was great. The whole premise is it's one issue stories about people kind of discovering their powers, and they're taking it in a little more less specific stereotypical comic book powers.
But they sort of went off that in the first volume, even
towards the end. Yeah,
he wasn't just about people. I don't even find this about. I mean, in this issue the woman has a premonition, then she goes to. Investigated. I didn't see superpowers in this at all.
Right. Well, she could see the future. She saw her future.
Yeah, but she had a dream about it. That's more fantasy, than superpowers.
Yeah. Well, I don't know.
Low level superpowers she can't control or utilize in any useful way.
Right. In fact, it almost kills her.
Yes.
Yeah. In fact, I thought she was gonna. I figured it out like halfway through.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, and when she doesn't die, and so I was relieved that she didn't
die. Now she's got all that credit card debt to deal with.
Yeah, exactly. She's gonna wish she was dead. I thought the one difference between this and the old demo series is Becky Cloonan's art is vastly improved in the past 6 years.
She was really good.
Yeah, it's really really good.
Very crisp and very tight and. I think it's very strong art. Looked really good. I don't know if she's just gotten a lot better. They were sort of pushing her to do, she was doing this before. It was a back end pay thing, and this time,
now Vertigo's paying.
You got to do a good job, step up, and she totally did.
Yeah.
In that way, I found the story a little, for me, I didn't really like Demo the first time all that much. I can see why you would, but I think it's just I was a little bored by it. I guess.
Were you bored by this issue?
Yeah.
Oh, all right. I enjoyed it.
I know. I read it. I was like, I was going to say that was the greatest thing ever.
No, I don't think it was the greatest thing ever. I mean, it was really, really good. I thought it was really tight. I mean, as a single story, I understood what was going on. I understood what she was dealing with. I thought the on a whim trip and everything was great.
It's nice to have a change of pace these stories, these one issue character pieces.
And I was really curious if Brian Wood was going to be able to go back here as quickly, considering it's been so long. And I did talk to him about that, and I thought he did. I thought it was if you'd hand me this with the old demo series, I wouldn't have known there was a 6 year gap other than the art being better. So,
with Justice Society of America Annual Number 2, I'm now done with the Justice Society.
I dropped this a while ago. Yeah,
I've been trying because for 5+ years, Justice Society has been one of my favorite books. I love the characters. Geoff Johns made me love them, but I don't know who the hell these people are anymore. Yeah. They don't act like the people that were in the Geoff Johns book. They act like they just met each other. They all hate each other. They're getting in fights. Yeah. They all follow Magog over like Jay and Alan. I almost blame Geoff Johns for putting Magog into the team to begin with. I'm done. I'm done. It made me sad to read it.
Yeah.
And it sucks because the regular Justice Society book has a backup feature about Liberty Bell and Hourman on international romantic adventures, and I want to read that.
Oh man, yeah.
But I'm done.
Love them.
This is I'm in the letters column this week. I mentioned it much like when Aaron Sorkin left The West Wing, and all of a sudden everybody was acting weird.
Yeah.
You remember that?
Listen, I watched all the way through West Wing, which you refused to watch the rest of it, and it got good again. So
right, but in the beginning, they all
you got to fight through it. The last season was spectacular.
All right, well, I'm done with that.
Isn't Bravo skipping the sixth season or something like that? Like,
I don't know.
Reruns? Yeah, fifth season.
I don't know.
Yeah.
But
anyway,
Jonah Hex 52. I love Jordy Brunet.
And I'm. You did.
Did you get Torpedo?
No, I looked through it at the store,
really
though.
Good.
Yeah.
You should get it, yeah.
No, I know. I said it before. When it first came on, I didn't like it.
I love that you came around on it.
Oh, totally.
I was reading this and I was like, he's just perfect for this.
Yeah, he is.
Great.
And that's a lot. I mean, beyond that, there's not a lot to say other than Jonah Hex kills a kid in this. Sometimes you got to kill a kid.
Sometimes you got to kill a kid.
It wasn't his fault.
No, the kid was trying to kill him.
He was bushwhacked. I mean, like, he's almost like, what else can you say about it?
Yep.
They came up with... I'm still fascinated that 52 issues in... They're still able to come up with a new story every time, and it's not terribly formulaic, really. It's not in that, like, oh, he stumbles onto this kind of thing, and then this happens. It's a little bit different every time, and it's fascinating. You think it's going to go one way, and you don't really know, except you know that in the end everyone's going to be dead except for Hex.
Criminal number 4, part 4 of the Sinner storyline. It wasn't bad. It wasn't amazing, but like I feel like every time I read Criminal, I slip into that Criminal world, and I read the story, and I really enjoy it, and then I walk away from it. You know,
I really like this issue.
Yeah,
And I'd sort of been slipping away from the book in general, you know, a little less interested because it's kind of the same.
Yeah.
But I like the Lawless character a lot, and I like the choices that this issue made him take.
Yeah.
And the way that the plot lay, you know, sort of. Came together, and the Chinese boss and the kids and the army guy chasing him.
There was the great scene with Lawless talking to the bartender.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that scene I really enjoyed. The guy who runs the Undertow.
Yeah,
like that argument. I thought that was great. Yeah, so
that was a really strong issue. I don't remember if I gave this 4 or 5 stars, but
yeah,
it was my favorite one of these in a while.
Yeah,
so I was losing interest a little bit.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it sort of not totally re-sparked my interest, but it.
I really didn't like the last arc, and I think that.
Yeah, it hurt the momentum of
the writer who had the like.
Yeah.
Oh, I liked that one a lot. I liked it.
No, I didn't like. Apparently, Ron and I don't agree on things, and that's
not. That's what it's,
I know.
Years later, yeah.
Invincible Iron Man, Josh.
Invincible Iron Man. Now, you guys know me very well, and one of the things that I can't stand in fiction is... No, that's retarded. is dream sequences.
Yes, you hate
like,
them.
And, like psychotropic, flashback-y,
yeah.
You know...
Hootenanny.
What's the word I'm looking for? Hallucinations, that kind
yeah.
of thing.
Yeah.
Now, half of this book takes place inside Tony Stark's mind, and it's Stephen Strange is in there. Am I supposed to call him Doctor Strange anymore? Can I do that?
He's still a medical doctor.
He's still certified.
He's not Sorcerer Supreme.
Except they've been in there for like 2 or 3 issues.
Yeah.
He's trying to get him to walk towards the, like, remember who he is and blah, blah, blah. And we all know what's going to happen.
He's going to come out of it, get the armor, and go punch Norman Osborn.
Yeah, exactly. So that part, whatever, I can take or leave. It does end with a cliffhanger at the end where, like, the ghost has found... The ghost is scary, by the way. The ghost, I don't know if it's the ghost or ghost, but the one from Thunderbolts.
Oh, yeah. It's a creepy looking character. Yeah,
he's like after them, and he finally found his way. And I don't know if you guys remember, but they were in like a little like hidden place, and Captain America was there. And now it's just Pepper and Maria Hill.
Ooh,
hot. And they don't have any weapons, and like they're just like kind of helpless. And so the end of it was really exciting because, you know, like, the ghost shows up and Tony's still on it, like, you know, laid out. He's not, his mind isn't there.
Some walkabout.
You're like, ooh, this is going to be a problem.
Yeah.
But there is a fantastic page in this where both Pepper and Maria realize and come out to each other.
Whoa.
No, not like that. That Tony slept with both of them.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like, it comes out, like, one of them saying, well, and then I slept with him. And then he's like, oh, you slept with him?
Wow.
And then there's a fantastic...
I didn't know Maria slept with him.
Well, that's the thing, is he stuck it in there. There's a really good page.
Yes, he did.
Like the last... Yeah. Of course he did. the last line on the page. She's hot. She's short, dark hair, and she's international operative.
That's true. It's hot.
She wears a skin-tight outfit.
Yeah. No, she's totally
she's a second in command.
Yeah.
That's terrible, what I just said.
Oh...
no, but the last line on it, they both sort of look at him, and he's laid out. And they're like, Tony fucking Stark. I mean, it's like, it's whatever, you know, blurred out. You know,
that's
symbols.
Awesome.
But it was a great page.
Yeah.
How much longer can the dream sequence last?
I want it over.
All right.
I mean, the thing is, if Ghost is there, ostensibly the beginning of the next issue, he's got to come out of that shit within a few pages.
Yeah.
And I want him out of it, because it was a really good idea, but too long now.
The scariest ghosts are Civil War ghosts.
Yeah.
All right.
From those Unsolved Mysteries.
Yes, yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, yes. Those are not good.
Haunted Tank.
Bad news.
I still think about those when I try to sleep. For the first time in over two decades, the National Comics Entertainment Convention is coming to downtown Chicago, and Ron and I will be there.
Yes, we will.
You can make your plans now to attend C2E2, the Chicago Comic Entertainment Expo, this April 16th through the 18th. You can join thousands of comic book fans, creators, celebrities. Are we either? Are any of those? We're fans.
No, we're not. We're fans, yeah.
For a weekend of fun and excitement in the city of broad shoulders. Is that where they're going with?
I never heard anybody say that until Chris Niesman said it.
Yeah, exactly.
And then
exactly.
Another year. I think Chris made it up.
I'm going to say that line again. Fun and excitement in the Windy City.
Yes,
the second city.
There you go. The flyover city.
Yeah, the flyover city.
Okay, there you go.
A hub city.
Yeah, hub. Yeah, hub, definitely a hub city.
Windy City.
Special guests for this year's show include Alex Ross, Jeff Smith, Jeff Johns, Mike Mignola, Ethan Van Sciver, and hundreds more of your favorite creators, and some lowly podcasters. Tickets are only $25 for a one-day pass, $50 for an entire weekend. You can find the full list of guests, events, and purchase tickets at c2e2.com. But wait, there is more. C2E2 and iFanboy are giving you a chance to win tickets and exclusive C2E2 merchandise before the big weekend. We'll be giving away one amazing VIP package, three weekend passes, five exclusive C2E2 posters signed by creator and guest of honor, Alex Ross, and 15 limited edition C2E2 t-shirts. And that grand prize is lunch with an editor from Marvel. Who's paying for that lunch?
C2E2.
Not us, the Marvel editor?
C2E2
people. The winner doesn't have to pay for it?
No, the winner does not.
You get to go and pay.
You buy
Steve Wacker lunch now. Tom Brewer, don't go to the...
No, don't take CB Sebulski.
Yeah, don't take CB, yeah. If you draw CB, you're screwed. It's going to be expensive.
But delicious.
Yeah.
So entering the contest is very easy. You go to www.c2e2.com/ifanboy. Put your name and your email in there, and that is all it takes. We'll be drawing winners from all of the entries on March 19th. Yep. Stay tuned for more exciting news from our official C2E2 after-party plans, and we'll be there saying goodbye to Around Comics.
Yeah, the party plans are coming together, folks. So if you're going to be in the Chicago area for this, you're not going to want to miss it.
Can I announce my contest to buy me lunch? You can't eat with me if you want to buy me lunch.
I'll take pictures of me eating it.
If you
send you my napkin.
Yeah. If you want to find out more about the after party plans, find out ways to win tickets and exclusive merchandise, just follow C2E2 on Twitter at C2E2.
Yep. All right, so Nova Number, we're going to fly through the rest of the books, all the books. Why did we decide to do this?
That's awesome.
So, Josh, were you upset by Nova Number 34? Because your boy went out like a punk again.
I noticed.
Again.
I don't think Lanning Black Bolt
very much. Black Bolt. So in the pages of Nova, you've got the young Sphinx and the old Sphinx and their selection of champions squaring off.
This book is ridiculous.
This book is awesome. It's great. And so you've got one-on-one battles, and Black Bolt gets destroyed.
Sphinx hates himself.
Yeah, he does.
He's such a dick to himself.
Yep, he is.
No, that's true. He does. I feel like...
Dead. Black Bolt dead.
Do you get the sense that there's like a...
By Basilisk.
At a certain point, they turn, like, I feel like at one point Black Bolt was the most powerful character at Marvel, and they've been like a systematic shutting his ass down.
Yeah, exactly. There's two books he's dead in.
Yeah, and he got lost. Yeah. I don't know how that works.
I don't think he's coming back. Anyway.
It's a fun issue.
All right, Blackest Night, the question number 37.
The star of this book was Bill Sienkiewicz. The non-star was the story.
Yeah, well, the star was Bill Sienkiewicz until towards the end when it got really rough and loose.
I liked it, though. I like him rough and loose.
Christ, you only had a week to finish this after the Starman.
Well, what was tough was that if you look at it, Dennis Cowan did the pencils, and Bill Sienkiewicz and John Stanishi,
John
whatever.
Stamos?
No, John Stanishi is credited as ink, so you could tell that it wasn't Sienkiewicz.
Yes, but I still love the texture that his art brings.
And
to
like, what happened was that started, and I got really excited because I went, "Ooh, Sienkiewicz!" I got excited again, and by the end of it, I was like, "Oh, I didn't really see it all the way through." I was disappointed.
There was enough of it though that it made it worthwhile.
Yeah,
I guess in this one, Charlie comes back.
Yeah, Vic.
And he fights Lady Shiv, and he fights.
What's his name? Vic or Charlie?
It's both, apparently.
I like Vic. Charlie.
They call him Charlie. Yeah, like Renee calls him Charlie.
Screw that! It's Vic.
All right. Anyway,
here, Josh, take a look while we talk about Blackest Night, Wonder Woman, number 3 of 3.
Okay.
The great thing about this issue, one inker on Nicola Scott.
Yes, agreed.
It's the same art all the way through, and it looked great.
It was consistent. It was beautiful. It was Nicola Scott should be on Wonder Woman. Make that happen now, DC. The negative thing of it was that there seems to be a major, impactful, two-page spread moment when pink Star Sapphire Wonder Woman wraps Red Lantern Mira in the lasso, and we see this flood of memories and truth that show all of Wonder Woman's loves, you know?
Well, no, just the one.
Yeah. And then...
which I'll talk about in a second.
Yeah, and then all of Mira's rage, and you see a lot of Black Manta, you see a lot of who I assume is Aquaman.
Yes.
A sleeping Aquaman, a kissing Aquaman, there's a baby. And then the next pages are like, you never told them. She's like, when could I? The conversation about reacting to that, I have no idea what happened.
No idea. I've read every Aquaman comic for the last 10 to 15 years. I don't know what the
fuck. You don't know what this stuff means. I assume it's going to be explored later on, and this will be one of
I'm hoping
things,
there's an Aquaman book that comes out of this. We talk about that. I didn't know what the hell it was. But what I find amusing is, in the same vein of Paul Dini pushing his agenda of putting Batman and Zatanna together, Rucka is just pushing hard on this Wonder Woman Batman pairing. Yeah, I love that
the
writers will just go, fuck it, this is what I want. Yeah. And it's happening in separate books.
That's what this is?
This whole
thing in the series has been she's been talking more about being in love with Bruce.
In her Amazonian womb?
Well,
he's not a superpower.
Anyway,
but it looked good, and
just so annoying that there's two pages that I just have no idea.
Yeah, I didn't know what they were either. Nobody, I can't find it anywhere on the internet. People know either.
Batman Confidential number 41. I don't buy this title. I got it because this is written and drawn by Sam Keith, with colors by Jose Villaruba, and it is beautiful. If you like art, you need to get this.
I heard it looked really nice.
It was beautiful. It was awesome.
Like art.
Tell me more.
So good.
Cable
number 23. God, end this story. My God.
Is it 25 the end?
It's been years. I don't know when it's going to end.
25 is the end, I believe.
They just keep going on.
And you have to keep buying Cable?
Yes.
I mean, I get the X-Men, but Cable? Right.
Well, because it's got the hope. It's got the girl. And now she's like late teens.
She's a hot late
redhead.
Oh.
Yeah, she's developed. Yeah,
no more ex Bjorn.
Does it end with Bishop chasing them?
Yes, Bishop is still chasing them. Although now they jumped in time again, and now they're in Central Park 1933, which is kind of funny because there's like a moment where they're in the park and there's like people walking and they all stop to look at them, which I think is really kind of funny.
That's the villain's not Norman Osborn.
Yeah, I know.
So in issue 25, it switches over to Deadpool and Cable again, doesn't it?
Oh yeah, ooh, then I can stop buying.
You used to love that book.
No, I bought it like twice.
You made your pick of the week once.
Yeah, that was the screw with everybody.
Because it was San Diego, we just wanted to get off with.
Yeah, exactly, it was good though. Marvel Heartbreakers number one. This one shot.
I think we should give the backstory in this.
What's the backstory?
Which is when the pull lists were made on Monday, Ron sends us an email saying, "I got your pick of the week right here," with a link to Marvel Heartbreakers. And Josh and I both went, "Oh, fuck."
It came really close.
No, it didn't.
No cigar. I've been enjoying these little anthology books that they pulled. I guess some of this was up on Marvel Digital before and was printed.
I can see that.
Yeah. Just really not very good, unfortunately.
It was, you know, the Spider-Man story was kind of cute.
It's all this, the Boom Boom, What's-Her-Face story, was not good.
No.
Our friend Jim McCann wrote a story about Beauty and the Beast, Dazzler and Beast. That was good. As an X-Men fan, I enjoyed it. I didn't really love the art by David Lopez, unfortunately.
I like the art in that.
Yeah.
That was nicely colored, too.
That was the best story.
That was the best story.
It sort of recalled that golden era of Marvel with the late 80s.
And I'll be honest with you, I didn't read the last story.
I got two pages in the last story. Yeah. I closed
the Alpha Flight Aurora. I skipped it. Yeah, no good. Anyway.
Yeah, it's kind of a disappointment.
Savage Dragon 157. We're halfway through the Dragon War story arc, and it just is awesome. Eric Larson rules. He's a god. It's just, I can't even go into why it is.
This is why we don't usually do every book we read.
Exactly.
See, people ask, they say, why did you talk about this book? We say, because we got nothing to say about it.
It's just,
now
it's
you know what happens, we have nothing to say about
it. When you're in the middle of a story arc where stuff happened, but nothing,
So quit bugging me. Yeah.
So this will be a lesson learned for people.
Savage Dragon rules, though, you should be reading.
Doom Patrol number 7 was the final issue of the backup story, the Kevin Maguire.
Still reading? Oh, yeah. It's because of that.
Well,
Kevin Maguire's gone, I thought.
This is the final issue. Okay, they end the backup story here.
Yeah.
And it's funny because I've been buying it for the backup story, but I've been finding myself intrigued with the main story.
Oh,
I think Giffen's doing a really good job.
7 issues, you want to be more than intrigued.
No, but the point of the characters are becoming more and more interesting with every issue, and I am interested enough to read 8 without the backup and give 8 a shot. And I may not like it, but it's been... He brings back some more Crazy Jane shows up in this one, and Oberon from the old Justice League days shows up.
I like Oberon.
His business is to relocate superheroes, like a moving service for superheroes. Yeah, so he comes in to move the Doom Patrol, and he's got specialized with all their dimensional portals and all the specialized handling. That was an interesting neat little scene.
You can't pick up guys at the Home Depot to do that.
No, you can't. You can't trust them. You can't mess them with your matter generators.
Now G.I. Joe Origins number something 12. Was the origin of Baroness as drawn by Ben Templesmith.
Ooh.
Oh, shit.
Yes.
Ooh, Mark Andrico wrote it, too.
Yes, Mark Andrico wrote it, and it was gorgeous.
Was it? Oh, wow, that's really cool. Yeah. I should have picked that up.
It was basically the origin of Baroness. Not a lot, you know, not... I she was. She's
Is she German?
She's the Countess de Cobray.
Right.
Wisconsin, actually.
De Cobray.
Yeah, it's the Wisconsin. Of the Wisconsin de Cobrays.
Really?
And...
I remember them from the yacht club.
What are the odds that her last name would be De Cobe, like Cobe? Yeah.
Ask Laura Hanna.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
But it's just, you know, she's a rich countess. She gets dissatisfied. She's a revolutionary. She meets up with a Spanish revolutionary who convinces her to kill her family. She does.
She's a countess from what country, though?
It's Wisconsin. One of those nebulous Eastern European countries.
Right.
But it's just her. She meets the revolutionary. She kills her family.
Okay.
And then ends up with Cobra. And ends up going back and killing the revolutionary for Cobra. But it was just the draw was the fantastically moody and atmospheric art that has been Temple Smith. And I love this. He should draw the series.
Yeah.
I don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah, it's probably not going to happen. But it was real nice, and I love this look. If you're Ben Temple Smith, then check it out.
Next up, Superman World of New Krypton number 12. This was the last of this series. It's I'd made some cuts, mostly due to economic choices, on a lot of books, but I kept this one all the way through, of all the Superman books. And I don't know if I really should have. I liked bits of it, but it wasn't the same book at the end that it was at the beginning, and there was no finality to it. Like, I was expecting a 12-issue story that at the end, we had a 12-issue story.
Right.
Like, a full-on thing, and it really just led back to Superman, and I found that a little disappointing.
Well, there's going to be a Wonk special. Superman Wonk.
Special Wonk.
It's one of those every night.
Superman The Last Stand of New Krypton number 1.
Yeah, but... You know what I'm saying?
Yes and no. I mean, I enjoy the tapestry of the Superman world. I'm reading all the books.
I like the character. I like the world. I just wanted,
I definitely see that
being one thing, and it just sort of, it got weird after a little while, where it had gone off the path it was on, and then I was like, they're not going to be able to finish this story up by the 12th issue.
Yeah.
They didn't. It just kind of stopped.
Yeah.
And so that felt like an unsatisfying ending.
You know, you never know the backstory. They may have had to rush things to get to the World War of Superman, whatever the next story is. But I've been enjoying all the Superman books, so it was all right. So that was what we thought of all of the books.
I read two more, and we're going to include them in the user reviews.
I'm doing a segue right now.
Well, no, I know, but you know, I read the books.
Can you tell we've been working all day? Shit's tired.
That's what we thought of the books that we read.
I read two more books,
and we're about to get to those.
Okay, good.
First, we're going to hear
those two.
You thought of those two books. We're going to read a user review. If you go to iFanboy.com, you can make your pull list. You can rate and review books, and you can write user reviews. We'd like to spotlight some of them on the show. The first one is from GLWarm76. He reviewed Siege Embedded number 2. He gave the story a 3 out of 5, and the art a 3 out of 5.
Wrong.
on both counts, honestly. Yeah.
And the pick of the week percentage was 0.09%. And here is GLWarm76's entire review of Siege Embedded number 2. I love the idea of this book. Osborn using the media to control the public perception of his actions and Ben trying to expose the truth, but the execution is weak at best. The art is effective, but the artist isn't given a lot to play with because of the way the story is structured. I know the story shouldn't have tons of action, but when I was finished reading the issue, I felt that it wasn't worth the price of admission. There's no excitement or fun to be had, and the story is easily forgotten.
Okay.
Josh's hair is big right
Josh,
now.
Josh,
we got big hair Josh.
Josh got worked up.
He's on the loose.
You know, I would read a book about a road trip with Volstagg.
Yeah, yes.
Quite honestly.
The first half was...
He just said it wasn't fun.
Yeah.
I was like, what is more fun than a road trip with Volstagg? And he's like, bounds out of the truck.
Hey, I require more pork rinds.
It was a ton of fun.
Oh, it was great. It was really, really good. And the thing is that you made the comment about the art, and now we are big Chris Somney fans. Like, it's going to,
dude.
But the thing is that you say that Chris Somney wasn't given a lot to work with, and yada, but... What he did with it is great. I'm loving it. You know, and we've talked about how Chris uses shadows and darkness and stuff like that. And this is a bright issue.
Yeah. Yep.
And it looked great. It just looked awesome.
I thought it was stronger than the last issue.
Yes. Yeah. Definitely. Totally. A lot of crazy shit happened at the end.
Look at these panels.
Yeah. Volstagg fighting, going out like a warrior. You know, this is great. It was a lot
He's
of fun.
Volstagg riding one of those goblin glider things from Hammer.
That was pretty funny.
That was a totally fun issue.
Yep.
In much the way that the last one, I wasn't in love with the story of the last one. And this one, I was like...
And Ben and the dude made a break for it. The guy faked a seizure. How great was that?
No, it was like it was just two normal guys
running
against Hammer. Like, I had so much fun with this issue. Yeah. That was a great one.
It was great.
It was really fun. Really good. And the final book that we bought and read this week, that will be totaling all the books we bought and read, we're never doing this again.
No,
never.
Actual Butt reviewed Ultimate Comics X number 1. He gave the story a 3 out of 5 and the art a 5 out of 5. And the pick-a-week percentage for the community was 0.23%. And this is Actual Butt's entire review. He says, "This book showed me that maybe Jeff Loeb isn't a lost cause after all. Well-paced, complex, and yet simple enough for new readers, Ultimate X number 1 has gotten me excited for the Ultimate Universe again. Art Adams' pencils are the only reason I bought this in the first place. I'm happy to report that he delivered as usual. His textures are what I have always loved about the most, and the setting of this book gave him ample space to showcase them. Every surface is so wonderfully tactile, and I felt like I could draw my finger across the page to feel them for myself."
Now, I share what happened to him in that I bought this immediately
for Art Adams.
Yep. I got home and went, "Loeb!" I didn't even realize Loeb was writing it. It wasn't bad.
I thought it was pretty. It was actually pretty good. Yeah.
Basically, because they killed Wolverine in the whole Ultimatum event, we get introduced to the fact that Wolverine had a son out there that was secretly being raised by James and Heather Hudson, who in Marvel regular was Guardian from Alpha Flight.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. But they live in Florida, so I guess they were just throwing Alpha Flight out the window in the Ultimate Universe, which is fine.
The only thing about this issue that got me was Kitty shows up.
Yeah.
And I went, "Don't you touch my Kitty."
Exactly.
Because it's Kitty, Ultimate Kitty from Spider-Man.
Yep, exactly.
So I was like, "Oh no, Jeff Loeb."
Yeah. But
you keep your hands off my Kitty, but she was fine in the issue.
But so Wolverine had a son named James.
I'm not reading this book, but I just saw what looks like he's in Quint's cabin.
Yeah, exactly.
Quint makes the shark stew.
Yes.
Yep, yeah, yeah.
He's building a boat really in is, there, yeah. yeah.
No,
I thought it was good.
I thought it was good. And it's a good way to get Wolverine back in the Ultimate Universe, so that's fine. So
I thought the art was fantastic, yeah, and the story was fine.
Adams is great. Let's see if he can do it on a monthly basis.
Yeah, that'll be the question.
See how long that lasts.
The only kind of goofy thing was the metallic claws.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
it was like he pops bone claws.
And then metal comes
and then all of a sudden
over.
Metal just sort of sheaths over.
Why mess with that?
Yeah, well.
Why mess with that?
I don't know.
Guys, I require pork rinds.
Well, so those are the books that came out. If you go to ifanboy.com/comics, you can see all the books that came out, do your pull list, and all that fun stuff. And when you're not reading comics, you should be listening to an audiobook. We want to thank Audible for sponsoring this episode. Audible is the place online to buy and listen to audiobooks. You can download them to your iPod or any other device to listen to them. They've got over 60,000 titles across all genres, like science fiction, fantasy, that sort of thing. If you go to audiblepodcast.com/ifanboy, you can sign up. You get a free audiobook and a free 14-day trial. I've signed up for it, and I kept on going after the 14 days, and I've been listening to audiobooks. This is awesome. Went in and found a pick for you. If you're a fan of Greg Rucka, like I know you are, you should listen to Patriot Acts.
I'm a fan of Greg Rucka.
Yeah, you should listen to Patriot Acts, which is the audiobook of his book, the audiobook version of his book that came out in, I think the audiobook was released in 07. 10 hours, and it's narrated by Jonathan Davis.
I wish it was narrated by Greg Rucka.
That would be
10
awesome.
Hours of him?
That would be awesome. So go to audiblepodcast.com/ifanboy, sign up, download Patriot Acts, give it a listen, and we thank them for sponsoring the show. And we also want to thank In Stock Trades for sponsoring this episode, where you can save up to 37% off. You get free shipping on orders over $50. They've got over 9,000 trade paperbacks in stock and ready to order. New releases come out every Wednesday, and we make an order. It usually ships within 48 hours. You want to go to InStockTrades.com, where you can find this month's Book of the Month, The Nom.
Volume 1.
Volume 1. Connor wrote the Book of the Month review. We're going to talk about that next week, because we ran long.
We did every book we bought.
No one asked for this.
Yes, they do.
Okay, so there you go. So
never happening again.
So, yeah,
enjoy
exactly.
it. Bask in it.
Good thing we did this week.
Let it wash
week.
Over you.
Savage Dragon came out. So, still good.
So you have time on Monday to go to In Stock Trades, buy the Nom, and then come back next week when we talk about the Book of the Month. But also, we want to tell you about the Summit City Comic Con. The good folks at DCBS and In Stock Trades are putting together the Summit City Comic Con in Fort Wayne, Indiana. It's going to be on May 22nd. You want to go to summitcitycomiccon.com to check out all the information about it. It's going to be a nice local smaller con. It's not a big, you know, kind of thing like C2E2. Mike Norton's going to be there. Some other great artists are going to be there. It's going to be more focused on like a kind of like if you didn't go to Windy City Comic Con in Chicago, it's going to be similar to that, I think. And like it's one day focused on the artists. You can really connect, get some great stuff.
Our fanboys, Josh Flanagan will be there.
Yes, he will. Josh has confirmed that he's going to be going to Indiana in May, on May 22nd, for Summit City Comic Con.
Maybe our fanboys Gordon the intern should go.
Yeah, maybe Gordon should go, actually. Maybe, you never know. But so check that out at summitcitycomiccon.com. It's going to be a great show. You're going to want to check it out. So that was all the books that we bought.
Oof.
We're never doing this again.
Not the show. I mean, yeah. We're going to do the show again.
We're going to do the show. But
as far as I know.
I like structure.
Yes, you do.
Yes, you do.
Yeah. So.
You knew Connor. That's the funniest sentence he's ever said.
So, as we talked about in the top of the show, we're giving away some Planet Hulk stuff.
Yes, this is the month of giveaways. There's going to be giveaways in every Pick of the Week show this week, and this is the first giveaway. It's a Planet Hulk giveaway, which was from the nice people behind Planet Hulk, the Marvel DVD, straight-to-DVD film. It's an 80-minute adaptation of the Planet Hulk storyline. We're giving away DVDs and posters. The first
posters are signed by Alex Ross. Keep in mind, these are like this is a great prize.
Well, the cover of the DVD is as the Hulk by Alex Ross grabbing grabbing a planet. Really nice image. And the grand prize winners of the posters are Timothy Boyson and Dale Philbrick. Timothy Boyson and Dale Philbrick, you both win Alex Ross posters. And they're signed by Alex Ross. And Matthew Scabba, you win a Blu-ray edition of Planet Hulk. Now, if you don't have a Blu-ray player, it comes with the digital copy, so you can play it on your computer.
Okay.
Or you can give it away to somebody who's got a Blu-ray player. Yeah. And Chris Schmidt, you win the DVD version. You win the regular DVD version. So those are our Planet Hulk winners.
Congratulations, guys. And Chris, Matthew, Timothy, and Dale are all iFanboy members, and that's how they were eligible to win this stuff. And if you're not an iFanboy member, you're going to want to be, because we've got such great stuff that's coming up that's being given away. Our next giveaway next week is a Top Cow giveaway,
I believe it is. You can go to iFanboy.com. There's a red post at the top. I think it's Top Cow.
We've got a Top Cow giveaway bundle. We've got a Vertigo bundle. And it's all culminating in our grand giveaway at the end of this month, which is and you're going to want to go check it out this week. Go to your comic shop this Wednesday, pick up Choker number 1 by Ben Temple Smith and Ben McCool. They've been kind enough to donate a signed copy of number 1, and Ben gave us an original page of art from the Choker preview that appeared in Liberty Comics number 2. It's the second thing he's ever drawn on this project.
I'm keeping it.
Yeah, no, you're not. We're going to give it away. So you got to be an iFanboy member. If you go to iFanboy.com/store, that's where you can sign up for a membership. You can sign up for $4 a month, $42 a year, or $10 a month, $100 a year. And you get a great little prize pack, and the $100 a year, $10 a month, people get a t-shirt. So being a member pays, and somebody might be a lucky winner, Ben Temple Smith original art, which is valuable and awesome.
It is awesome. And really quickly, the t-shirts, the Battle Pug shirts are almost out. There's a very small stack left.
Immensely popular Battle Pug shirt.
Very popular Battle Pug shirt.
I just got mine. It's good looking.
Yeah.
So if you are interested in getting a Battle Pug shirt, you better get on that and order it soon, because we're almost out. And we're still doing pre-orders for the Fear Agent shirt, which we'll probably put into production at the end of the month.
Soon, yeah. So pre-order your Fear Agent shirt while you can. Go to iFanboy.com/store. You're going to want to check out iFanboy Don't Miss. If you haven't subscribed to that, go to iTunes and sign up for it today. Chris Niesman, our good buddy from Around Comics, has come over and has been helping us out with it. He's going to be talking to Phil Hester this Monday about The Anchor, his series from Boom, I believe.
Which is coming out in the first trade is out this week.
The last issue of the series comes out, as well as the trade, which is a great way to jump onto it. Listen, Phil's a great writer, so listen to what he's got to say about that. So subscribe to iFanboy Don't Miss. And we did a Talksplode last week with Brian Wood, so you're going to want to download and listen to that. We've got some other great stuff lined up coming your way soon.
Awesome. Go to iFanboy.com, check out the Pick of the Week review that Ron wrote.
Yes.
And all the discussion that took place after that, a lot of you got lucky. Well, everyone was like...
Yeah, a lot of people agreed, yeah.
Yeah, you're right. Thank God Ron was here. You asshole.
Well, there was 63% for the community. Yeah. So,
and lots... Listen, I could have been like, sure, Blackest Night won, but that's not how I roll. I have integrity. There's all sorts of great discussion that goes there. Go to ifimbo.com/about to see who we is and how you can hook up with us on the internets.
Yes, and you can call and leave a voicemail at 1-888-FANBOYS at 326-2697, or you can email us at contact@ifanboy.com.
We also have a video show, which we do every Wednesday. Last week was...
The anthology
show. Yeah.
Original art, storytelling, and Johnny Cash.
Johnny Cash. And this week is the... It's a vault show, right?
It is.
It's a vault show. Yeah.
I don't remember if there's a theme.
A Spawn and...
so we did Spawn Vault.
Yeah.
No, it's just,
Battlefield.
I don't think there's a theme.
There's no theme. It's just a good vault.
Battlefields and the one I talked about.
It's a good vault. So.
Oh, Unknown Soldier.
Yeah. All right. So that's coming your way every Wednesday. You can check it out on revision3.com/fanboy or fanboy.com.
And go to iTunes and write reviews of this podcast, of our video show, and of Don't Miss. If you signed up for Don't Miss, write some reviews. Let's get it in there. And tell everybody you know about iFanboy. Help spread the word. All right, well, we are late for dinner, so we're going to wrap this baby up. Yeah, so until next week, I'm Ron.
I'm Connor.
I'm Josh Flanagan. I'd like to thank everybody for listening. I appreciate it.
It was a little wild.
This is a manic show. Back to normal next week. Back to the normal format.
Do you guys want to talk about G.I. Joe, the animated series, at all?
Yes.
Live! Come on.